49 to St. George's Hill. A ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to Diggers. So we come to work the lands in common.
Welcome to Radio Free Kanata. I'm your host, Kevin Annett. Welcome back. We're broadcast here every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific at the BBS Radio Network, bbsradio.com/radiofreekanata. That's our handle. You can also follow the work of the Republic and the Common Law Movement at kanatarepublic.ca and the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State, itccs.org. Today on Radio Free Kanata, the mass grave called Canada, Stopping Our Domestic War Crimes. Now, the operative word there is stopping, not simply documenting, not simply adjudicating. We're out to stop the crimes of today and yesterday, and one of the ways that we do that, of course, is through knowledge. And when people first approach this topic, they say, and I get this all over the world, wherever I go and speak, not Canada, not in beautiful Canada, these crimes can't be going on. Well, it's often the case that the local town child rapist is always the most respected, beloved person in town. Same way with Canada. For many decades, Canada's operated as a cover for horrendous crimes. The simple fact that after World War II, more war criminals from Nazi Germany escaped through Canada than any country in the world. As a matter of fact, Prime Minister Louis Saint-Laurent brought in an entire Galician SS division, all 12,000 men, under Project Paperclip. And so the crimes of Canada are much more serious than people realize at first. Even those activists who think they know about the topic miss a lot. And people simply have to go to the website itccs.org. If you look at the masthead, you'll see a section that says Genocide in Canada, Case Number 1. And you'll see 3.5 hours of documented evidence there of some of the stuff we're going to be talking about today, both crimes of the past and the present. And with me, of course, is my co-host, Ryan Gable, who will be talking about, along with a lot of other stuff, some of the cultic aspects of these crimes. And, of course, Dean Clifford is going to join us at the bottom of the hour as well, calling in from southern Manitoba, to talk about how to use the common law to stop these war criminals. Now, as I mentioned, if you go to itccs.org this last week, you'll see posted a list of who we like to call the Dirty 30, the 30 war criminals who were prosecuted and convicted by the International Common Law Court of Justice during 2012 and 2013. Not only the prominent defendants like Prime Minister Stephen Harper, Queen Elizabeth, and Pope Benedict, but other lower-level officials of church and state. And one of the people I like to mention, of course, in the Dirty 30 is the Vatican's ambassador to Canada, Pedro Quintana, who's the actual papal ambassador. He's called the papal nuncio in Ottawa. He personally took a hand in covering up and moving around child rapists in the city of Cornwall, Ontario, as the that whole massive child trafficking network, cross-border child trafficking network that goes on as we speak, especially relying on Mohawk Native children, that was covered up directly through the Papal Nuncio's office. So these are some of the things that we're going to be talking about today. We welcome your participation. In the weeks ahead, we are going to be having more programs organized by some of the members of the Republic, and especially, and I want to, before we go to Ryan and Dean, I want to point out another crime in our midst that just happened 10 days ago. The murder of a young man in Kitchener, Ontario. And basically what happened is this fellow was standing out on his front doorstep, and a cop came along and shot him through the heart, shot him dead. And there's a big movement starting up in Kitchener, Ontario, because the terrorism by the Kitchener-Waterloo police is ongoing. We've had Steve Finney on before describing how he was held at gunpoint, dragged out of his car, and practically killed, simply for standing on his common law rights. Well, this happened again to another young man. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to have people who are involved in a movement there in Kitchener to expose these crimes coming on the air to talk about it. So let me bring on Ryan first. Hi, Ryan. Are you there?
I am, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Ryan, one of the things that I wanted to get your take on, first of all, is, you know, for let's start with one of the documented war crimes in Canada, and of course these occurred in the United States as well, and what was done to Aboriginal children in the so-called Indian boarding school system. Now, as we people have known, some of the more gruesome aspects, not only the mass killings through deliberate exposure to tuberculosis and smallpox, that's been documented, acknowledged by the mass media. Of course, nobody's gone to jail or even trial for any of that, but it's well documented. But the specific tortures that are being used on children decade after decade, things like exposing them to not just communicable diseases, but radiation treatment, applying electric shocks to their heads, their genitals, and limbs, extracting teeth without painkillers, all of these things, and then the testimonies of people who survived these tortures describing how they were marked cultically by priests and others, were used in slave sadistic rituals and things like that, helped bury children even while they were still breathing, things like this. All of this has a real cultic ring to it, and I came across a really interesting book about Roman and Greek necromancy. Now, necromancy is, unless I'm mistaken, old rituals of how to communicate with the dead. And it struck me that when you're looking at these crimes in the Indian residential schools and elsewhere, they're almost like a continuation of those rituals of necromancy, where basically to summon the dead, blood sacrifices had to be performed, but whereby the dead were reanimated, and then they could share their knowledge, their secrets, their power, and so on. These Indian schools, when you look at them, they were almost set up like a symbolic representation of the underworld. Children continually talked about being taken to forbidden areas in the basement, as if, you know, the basement represented a crypt or a descent into the underworld. The architectural configuration of these schools were always in an H format, almost for H for Hades. Boys and girls strictly segregated. But this whole kind of atmosphere of, necromancy, it seems to pervade a lot of this. And I'm just wondering what your take would be on this. Is this simply far-fetched, or do you think this has a basis, these crimes have a basis in these kind of arcane rituals?
Well, I haven't thought about necromancy for a while. I wrote a little bit about it a couple of years ago, and I did one of my radio shows, The Secret Teachings, on the subject. Everything that you just said, Kevin, there are so many different avenues I think I could take to really properly answer the question that you have. The simplest answer is that, yes, necromancy definitely has something to do with these killings. Necro and mancy come from two terms, basically meaning dead divination, or what's called black magic. Of course, black, dead, would be the kind of the symbolic representation of those words. And of course, divination, trying to predict the future, providing in forms of magic, when people wear robes and capes, or they use scepters or magic wands. These are all basically illusions to divert people's attention, when in fact a lot of what we call magic is really just science. So in terms of bringing people back from the dead, my mind goes a couple of places. The first place it goes is I'm thinking about ancient mystery schools, which in some ways performed a type of necromancy, because if you think about the story of Jesus being resurrected after 3 days, there's also a Japanese goddess, of course, Amaterasu, who was resurrected after 3 days. Jonah and the whale. Jonah was in the whale's stomach for 3 days. Lazarus was resurrected after 3 days. Pythagoras and the Great Pyramid in Egypt resurrected after 3 days. And these three-day initiation ceremonies have a lot to do with the alignment of the planets and the different solstices and equinoxes and the different energies that can be obtained by performing rituals on those specific days. Now, as it comes down to necromancy, you're exactly right. Necromancy is basically, it's a method of divination. It's a way to communicate with the dead. And it's a way to obtain information from the dead, or specifically to summon demons in order to obtain information, because ancient people, the Greeks, they also believed that demons could tell them the meaning to life. They could give them information about the future, what was going to happen in the future. And of course, if we don't know what's going to happen in the future, it's unknown, it's black. Therefore, this type of work would be considered black magic and would be frowned upon by many. ways in which this would take place. They would use magic circles, specific symbols. You see pentagrams associated with this because pentagrams are actually a sign of defense. And by being inside of a pentagram or using a pentagram, you can defend yourself from unsavory entities, from bringing them into this dimension, if you will. And a lot of this is literal, Kevin, and a lot of it is really symbolic. A lot of it is done for energy reasons, and a lot of it is done, I think, just simply to provide an image. Like if you're going to ritually sacrifice somebody, you're going to, let's example, in some cases we know where blood has been consumed of victims, kind of like an unofficial communion, if you will. And right. That, first of all, is part of a form of conjuring in necromancy. In order to summon the dead, flesh of a human or of an animal, blood of a human, specifically those who are very young, must be given to this entity that is being summoned into this world. So it's a form of sacrifice. And if you're going to perform a sacrifice like this, one of the things I think you could do, if you read the stories about Jimmy Savile, what he would do, he would also take people down into basically like the crypt of a hospital with candles lit. They would wear robes and masks. And basically what it is, it's an illusion. It's the form of magic where you basically trick people. You're tricking these young girls, these young boys, these kids. You're keeping them in a state of constant fear. And we know very well, science has proven this, the Heart Institute has proven this, that certain energies and vibrations are given off by the body when you're in a state of fear, as opposed to right. when you're in a state of happiness. So you're able to obtain that energy within the blood, which ancient people and today we very well know blood contains the life force of a person. So by containing that life force and by using that energy through the ritual, through the illusions, through the magic, and consuming that blood, they're able to consume that energy, consume that life force, and they believe that this gives them a form of divination into the future. In fact, did you see that new movie Exodus, Kings and Gods, or Gods yes. and Kings? Mm-hmm. Okay, so at the beginning of the movie, when Moses is with the Pharaoh and his brother Ramses, they killed, I think it was a chicken, and they drank the blood as a form of divination, and that was shown in that movie just recently that came out. That's what we're yeah. dealing with.
Well, one thing I wanted to kind of connect it to the crimes in Canada, you know, what I find really interesting over the years, having coming out of the Protestant church, but also having had a lot of contact with Catholic clergy over the years, how similar, how over the centuries these things don't change much. I mean, it's kind of like the cult of Mary, the continuation of the goddess worship. These are the yeah. same rituals being performed under new guises. And one example of that was the insider information we got last year, where a Catholic bishop from Quebec named Gérard Lacroix took part in a ceremony on March 23rd in Rome, the Roman festival of Feralia and Terminalia. And one of Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister's cabinet members, he's a senior cabinet minister from Quebec called Denis Lebel. He was present at this ritual, according to eyewitnesses. It took place in the Jesuit chapel just about a kilometer from the Vatican. And again, in a crypt, at an altar, sacrificial ritual. So I would say that, you know, it's safe to say that since a lot of these crimes occurred under Catholic auspices, Church of Rome, would you say that these would be, there'd be a continuity there from, say, what was happening 1,000, 200,000 years ago in Rome and today?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the line of power that goes through the Vatican comes from these exact sects. And as a matter of fact, what you mentioned about very prominent Nazis coming to America, South America through Project Paperclip, that was one project. It was run through the Central Intelligence Agency, a project called Odessa, which was actually headed in Europe by the Vatican and the Red Cross. So there's a huge connection there. But absolutely. Today, Kevin, we celebrate here in America. We celebrate many holidays that come from Rome. Feralia is one of the holidays that we obviously don't celebrate, but we celebrate Christmas, which is Saturnalia, a worship of the god Saturn, agriculture. We worship different deities throughout the year. We don't even realize it. And that continuity that you're talking about is absolutely prevalent. If you look, let's say, for example, Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day, if you look at the history of it, and there's really not enough time to go into a lot of detail, but the origins of Valentine's Day come from Rome, and it doesn't come from some guy named Saint Valentine. It actually comes from a group of Roman priests who used to go down into cellars or crypts or into caves, which represent the womb of the earth. It's a more right. goddess symbolism. and they would sacrifice a dog and a goat, and the symbolism of the goat and the dog have to do with different stars and different planets, such as Sirius, the dog star, and the goat, which is a symbol of Saturn, which is why you have the two horns and the two horns of Satan or the devil. And they'd go down and they'd sacrifice these animals, they'd drain their blood, and they would cut hide off of the animals, and they would soak the hide, the flesh, in the blood, and then they would go into the city, and they would, as a sign of fertility, they would slap women with the bloody hide, and they would slap crops with the hide, hoping that this would bring some form of life to make women more fertile and to make the crops more fertile. And that's something that's not necessarily even looked at as dark. It's just not really that known about. Now, if you translate that to what goes on behind the scenes, the same thing is conducted by the same types of, for example, the same types of families that have run the mafia for generations and generations in Italy, the same bloodlines that have control both in the presidents here in the U.S. and prime ministers around the world. It's the same kind of bloodline. They perform these rituals, I think, because they believe, and maybe it does give them some type of power, some type of energy that they use to maintain control in the world, because the one thing I think people forget to really pay attention to, Kevin, is that most of them are not like us. They don't have empathy, and they don't feel the same way we do about these crimes.
Right. Well, you know, to bring it into another issue here, which is a big one that we've always tend to address, and that is human trafficking and child trafficking. And, of course, Canada is a big market for that. One of the things that we learned from a woman in Vancouver, Canada, on the West Coast, Hannah Anderson, who's made a real campaign over this, because when she was a teenager, her baby was taken from her under what's called the BFA protocol, the Baby for Adoption Protocol, which is a policy in Canadian hospitals and apparently in America as well, where basically adoption agencies go to the Catholic Church primarily, but they go to other churches as well, and they give them a list every year and say, we need these number of newborn babies. We need to traffic them. We need them. You know, there's a whole bunch of ways that newborn babies are used, not only by families who are infertile, but, you know, for the others, nefarious reasons. And they say, they give them a list, and these are the number of babies we need. And so young women are targeted. We know that for a fact. Hannah's a living eyewitness to this. In the late 1980s, she was targeted. She was 16. She got pregnant. She came from a Catholic family in North Vancouver. And the priest approached her and said, we're going to put you in this home. And there's several of these homes operating in Vancouver. And basically what they do is they put the kids in here. They're like residential schools. They brainwash them that they've got to give up their baby for adoption. They give them videotapes. They give them all sorts of chemicals, lactation suppressants, all sorts of drugs to make them susceptible to surrender in their own child. And then that child disappears and they never see it again. We know that there's an enormous baby adoption racket going on, and one of the purposes of that, of course, is for sacrificial purposes. And so when we're talking of this human trafficking, there's many aspects to it, but it seems to me that when we're looking at any particular crime, and like the one I mentioned earlier, the police killings of innocent people, you know, they walk up in just on April 2nd, a young guy, 20 years old, in Kitchener, Ontario, Bo Baker. He's sitting on his porch. He has a knife in his hand. A policeman comes up and kills him, just shoots him. It's almost as if, because these things are happening so regularly, almost routinely, the RCMP do it regularly, especially the Aboriginal people, just shoot them and kill them. It's so routine and regular, it's almost like a sacrificial rite. They're deliberately what do you think of that idea?
I think that the credence that I would give to something like that would be the way in the which the media portrays it, the way in the which the story gets out there. For example, right now I think we are coming up on May Day, May 1st, and starting April 30th is something called Walpurgis or Beltane. There's a 13-day festival that happens from the 19th of April to May 1st, roughly. And this festival, to some, calls for a blood sacrifice, the death of children, and a fire sacrifice to the gods. And during this time of the year, Kevin, you will find more news stories that promote situations where there has been explosions, fire, the death of children, such as like the Oklahoma City bombing took place during this time. A lot of mass shootings, the death of children, all took place during this time of the year. So even if it's not something that's planned out, it might seem very ritualistic in the sense that the way the media portrays it, they really promote these stories during certain times of the year. And what it does, I think, is that it gets people riled up. People become scared. They're worried about themselves. They're worried about their family. They're worried about their kids. And that fear, that energy gets absorbed into the earth, literally. Example, I mean, look at like the 2012 London Olympics and the symbolism there. That energy gets absorbed into the earth. And I think it travels the different ley lines that we have. And this is why certain people perform certain rituals at certain locations over and over again to break down that energetic portal and to be able to use that fear and that energy that's within the earth to perhaps, as we said before, summon the dead as a type of necromancing.
Well, let's talk about that fear for a minute, because it's a big issue, like in our movement and any work people ever try to do. One of the things we've experienced in starting up these common law courts, for example, which did prosecute these war criminals, these 30 war criminals in Canada, there's standing citizen arrest warrants out for all of these people who are being convicted by a lawful citizen jury. But they say, well, we can't arrest them. We're just citizens. It's almost like listening to a battered child speak. Like, I can't raise my voice or hand against the parent. And so, you know, we do know people are conditioned this way, to kind of habitually obey authority, even though when they know it's wrong and criminal and have committed these crimes. So one of the things at the bottom they are after our song, when Dean comes back on, one of the things I want to kind of broach is, what are the ways that we, in practice, overcome this fear? What are some of the practical methods we can use to break down that part in that hole that fear has in people? What's the antidote to fear, if you like, both in spirit but also in practice? Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's something that's very, very important. That's something that I experience every day dealing with people who are afraid to talk about certain issues, whether it's genetically modified food or it's something along the lines of what we're discussing today. And what you have to realize is that people tend to have this romanticized view of how the world is. It's how they've been conditioned to think, an instant gratification, being taught that no matter what you do, there's always a medication to take care of you. There's always this, there's always a way. You just do whatever you want. That's the way the world is. And people don't really take care of themselves. They delegate authority to others. They don't really have respect for themselves. And anytime you say something to somebody, Kevin, that's, for example, if I open my mouth and I mention one of the topics, even necromancy, to somebody, they'll say that's negative. That's dark. That's satanic. And they don't really have an idea of what Satanism is outside of Hollywood. They don't really have an idea of what the word dark is implying. It just means basically unknown, like the word occult just means unknown, something that's held in secret. And they look at it and they hold up a cross to it and they think that it's very satanic and very dark. And they use one word in specific. They say that's very negative. It's negative to talk about things like this. It's negative to talk about how our food is prepared. It's negative to talk about the ways in which our citizens all over the world under many governments have been experimented on, from radiation to different types of drugs, to the medical industry, to just being straight up guinea pigs. I saw a story the other day how the Japanese soldiers dissected U.S. soldiers during World War II, dissected them while they were alive. Stories like that,
right,
that you tell
the,
somebody.
Unit in Manchuria. Units, yeah, it had a number two. I forget the number, 531 or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So you saw that story too.
Yep.
And stuff like that, people think's negative. But here's the thing. It's not negative. What's negative is to repress it, to say, no, that doesn't happen because the world is the way I want the world to be. I want my kids to grow up in this dream world where nothing bad ever happens. And as they do that, it's very ironic because at the same time, they teach their kids to be scared of everything, be scared of this, be scared of that, be scared of this, but then provide them the illusion that everything is okay. What's truly negative is to suppress this information and to live in some fanciful world where everything is just peaches and cream every day. It's much, much more positive to address the issues at hand, to be aware of the things that we're facing as a people, as individuals, as a culture, as a species, to address them and to take care of those problems before they become larger problems.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, the use of words. Negative is just simply, well, it's not just the opposite of positive, but to negate something is to cancel it out. And, of course, if you're sitting there running the status quo, the last thing you want to do is have anyone negate the present system. So it's kind of like where they wire in this programming into all of the little serfs. Well, you don't want to negate things. You want to just kind of improve them all the time. You want to work with the system and make it better. Right, we don't want an altogether new system, which is what we're all about here. We're about people taking back their power and the law in their own country. So, I mean, it's funny, like the word arrogant, that's another one I like. It's a word in Italy, in Italian, it means arrogati, means to claim for oneself. Well, what's wrong with that? But the masters don't want us claiming anything for ourselves. You know, that's to be arrogant. That's a bad thing, right?
Oh, you're right. Our language is completely destroyed, Kevin. I mean, it's really used as a way to oppress people. And one of the things that always got me as a child was, you know, you're always told, don't say that word. That's a bad word. And I always used to think, how can a word be bad? And as you grow up, you learn that our language is being cut up and it's being diced up much more every single day, especially with texting and the way that people communicate through instant messaging where people are abbreviating words. It's just like George Orwell's 1984, if you ever watch the movie or read the book, how there's a special sect of the government, the Ministry of Truth, where they go in and every single quarter of the year, they introduce a new dictionary that has less words in it. And as they introduce the dictionaries, then the serfs, the proles, have less of a way to express themselves and express how they feel. So you can ask people, you know, is the government corrupt? Are people being murdered on a daily basis through ethnic cleansing and genocide? And people say, yeah. And you ask them, well, how do you feel about that? And they don't have the words to be able to express the way that they feel.
Right. Well, you know, it kind of leaves, we're at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have a short break here. It kind of leads into this song. Now, once again, I've chosen a Woody Guthrie song that's sung by Bruce Springsteen, and it's one of the best songs ever written by Woody, and that's called This Land Is Your Land. And we'll listen to it and then be right back with Dean Clifford.
I'd like to do a song for you that I guess is about the greatest song ever written about America. And it's by Woody Guthrie. And what's so great about it is it gets right to the heart of the promise of what our country was supposed to be about. And I guess I don't know if you talk to some of the unemployed steel workers from East LA or Pittsburgh or Gary. There are a lot of people out there whose jobs are disappearing. I don't know if they'd feel if this song is true anymore. And I'm not sure that it is, but I know that it ought to be.
And that's Bruce Springsteen with Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land. And of course, brothers and sisters, it is our land. And it's time we took it back. So we're here every Sunday to do that. To be a spark to get you to take action. This is not just abstract education. This is education for a purpose. And this is going out to that group of farmers in Alberta I spoke to this last week who are fighting mortgage fraud. This is going out to the people on the West Coast who are looking for their stolen children. This is going out to the relatives of that young man in Kitchener, Bo Baker, who was shot to death by the Kitchener police. It's time we all stand together. This is your forum. When you have programs and issues, contact us, republicofkanata@gmail.com. You can come on the air, and we can build our movement. Dean, are you on the air yet? He's not there. Okay. Ryan, why don't we, let's keep talking about this whole theme of overcoming fear in practice. One of the things that I wanted to encourage people to do, what I find is when you start, it doesn't really matter where you start. You pick an issue, you pick a cause in your neighborhood, and you start working on it. The immediate thing that people will face, is this whole thing that, well, what's going to happen to us if we do this? It's almost like that's the fear-based response. I find that the way I was able to do the work over the last 20 or more years is not by reacting that way at all, not thinking what might happen to me. I'm thinking, what's going to happen to that poor guy down the road if I don't do this? What's going to happen to those children tomorrow if we don't take action? And when we're led by that, that empathy and love, that outrage at what's being done in our name with our tax money, and it's happening right now, that is a great antidote to fear, I find. And the more of us who do that, the more it kind of just blows away that whole fog. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the more of us that have that mentality, Kevin, the more of us that have that mindset of what's going to happen to my neighbor rather than what's going to happen to me. If everybody just sort of had that, or not even everybody, but a large portion of the population, maybe even a small portion of the population, as you say, a critical mass. If we can all start thinking like that, thinking not what's going to happen to me, but what's going to happen to my neighbor if I don't do this, it reminds me of that quote, and I would butcher it if I tried to quote it, so I'll paraphrase it. Something like, the Nazis, they came for this particular group, and I said nothing because I was not a member. You remember that quote?
Yeah, Pastor Niemöller, the famous quote about, and finally when they came for me, there was nobody left to defend me.
Absolutely, yep. And that's what we're dealing with.
Yep. Dean, are you on the air with us?
I'm here finally.
Hey, brother. Good to have you back.
Oh, yeah, I was just working all day. I had to run home, run back here, shower real quick. I was covered in stuff from doing some demolition work, right. And just made it on the radio.
Well, good. Always good to have you on. We've been talking about how people overcome their fear in practice. And, I know that you are probably an expert on this, considering the meat grinder they tried to put you through and did put you through. What were your thoughts, when you were, obviously you had moments in jail and at other times when you were scared. What is the way that you overcame that, just personally?
I don't even know what to say about that. sometimes you start to wonder if you're actually ever going to get out of there kind of thing. So, I don't know. I'm not really particularly scared of these people. It's like, again, it's the worst they can do is just keep you in there for a prolonged length of time, which really does mess up your life a whole lot. Yeah, but, I don't even know what to tell you for advice to deal with. You just kind of, there's a lot of days where you don't think you can, actually. Some days every minute seemed like an hour. You're just sitting there and just nothing going on.
Yeah.
It got pretty monotonous and pretty boring and pretty depressing at times, but... Yeah, you just have to realize that it'll pass. Eventually, you'll get out, and you just gotta keep at things, and then you rebuild when you get back out, and you pick up where you left off, and it's never that bad.
I've always found that when people say kind of raise issues, well, we don't know if we have the right or the power to do a certain thing. It's kind of an observation from the sidelines, because when you're in thick in the battle and you realize what has to happen. I remember the times, for example, we used to go and occupy churches in Vancouver, the police would show up and we'd start talking to the police and we'd get some of them on our side. And then when you get right into the thick of a battle, a lot of that fear drops away because you realize, we got to do certain things for each other. And that's why it's really important to bring people into action and the whole thing of, what you've been modeling and the idea of... recovering the common law, it's one of the ways that I think is a good antidote to a lot of these things.
Yeah, hey guys, another thing I think people don't realize is that sometimes they feel like when they get involved in this kind of work, even just in research, let alone being an activist, there's a little bit of doubt in their mind, I think, and they kind of feel that maybe they're wrong. So they have a little bit of fear about being incorrect about what they're actually saying. And once they get into the heat of a situation, whether it's with the cops or, in an argument with other people, or they see how a situation really unfolds, that fear kind of dissipates and they see that, hey, maybe that feeling that I had that I was incorrect is not right, that it's wrong, and that in fact that what we're talking about here is really, the truth of what's happening, what's actually going on in the world, and that fear starts to dissipate. And the best way to get rid of that fear, that darkness, that uncertainty, is to spread the truth and to spread light, illuminate people. And that's that positivity as opposed to the negativity of repressing it and living in the dark like we were talking about a few minutes ago before break.
Right. Somebody isn't using a keyboard, are they? I heard it sounded like a horse was chomping through the room or something, but maybe it's just some technical thing. Dean, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, we mentioned one or two shows back about you're hoping over the next little while to, maybe do some more activities. Is there stuff you want to kind of update people about that, in terms of any of your own work?
We're just past the three-week mark of me being out, so we haven't really got too much more further forward in a lot of the projects I'm working on, other than that my own video show there that I'm doing now on CCN every Monday at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time, and just covering some basics on there and starting to get people, more mainstream people, introduced to exactly what we're all about. If I can even categorize all of us as a we, which we're really, I mean, there's so many of us doing so many different things that there is no real we. There's just a whole bunch of us, again, all starting to kind of work together to get our goals accomplished. But I'm still going full scale ahead with my divestment plan. And we have a new forum that's going to be going up right away soon for people to join and be able to connect with others in their area and get involved in projects we're going to be doing locally everywhere, not just Manitoba-wide, not just Canada-wide, but worldwide. And we just want to start gathering everybody together. And again, it's about building our own new systems. There's no reason in this day and age with the internet and with all the online currency alternatives that we can't go around all of their systems and all of their firewalls and start doing business with ourselves and connecting worldwide without having to interact through any of these institutions. There's no reason we cannot do that in this day and age, especially now that I'm out and I've seen how much things have progressed in just 16 months technology-wise. There's absolutely no excuse to not do this anymore.
Well, I have a question.
I just got to ask you. I just got called by the technical guy, and he said apparently we can hear you typing on the keyboard or something. So you'll have to either mute it or anyway not do it during the show because we can hear all the clacking. Just so you know.
Weird. I'm actually not on the keyboard at all.
Oh, you aren't?
Oh, no.
That's what. Yeah, I sent a message over. I thought that somebody was typing too.
Yeah. No.
Another mystery. Weird. Oh well.
Yeah.
Okay, could be the headset. We'll that's all right. Yep. I have kind of. Okay.
Yeah, no worries. I'm not even using a headset, but yeah, I'll just keep talking where I am.
Okay, no, that's fine. Here's a quote I love from John Adams in the American Revolution. He said, "The revolution was effected before the shots were fired. The revolution was first in the minds and the hearts of the people." And, you know, I'm seeing that everywhere, Dean and Ryan both. Wherever you go, people are waiting for a spark. Their minds and hearts are already in the direction you're talking about, Dean. They want to build something new. They even have the information, but they're waiting for the leadership and the spark. And I think that's one of the reasons that the system periodically takes people out and tries to scare, this growing awareness in people by imprisoning or targeting prominent individuals. But that's not working, from what I can see.
I have a question for both of you.
Yep.
Well, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to ask you your question now, then.
I was just going to say, what you were mentioning a second ago, Dean, is that we do have a new ways to communicate and connect with people so much more every single day. Personally, I feel that this is the beginnings of, and just like you were saying, Kevin, this is the beginnings of a type of revolution. We're just looking for the leadership to lead us through this. So a little bit about what both of you said, but what do you guys think? Do you think that this is the beginnings of a revolution or at least the start of the beginnings?
Well, I wouldn't have named my show on CCN, "The Beginning is Here," if I didn't think that we are at the beginning of a complete transformation of society across this entire planet. There's no question that's going on right now. Many people more and more waking up every day realizing that not only can we do some, just basically govern ourselves better and live better lives without these institutions, or not only can we get by without them, but we would in fact have better lives without these institutions. That's not even a question. And yeah, as for leadership, I wouldn't say it's so much even just leadership. People don't really need anybody to lead them. I think they just need to see somebody step forward, and as confidence, just to say, okay, well, this guy's got no problem standing out in front and shouting back at these guys and saying, "I don't care what you do to me. I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to let you take my rights. I'm not going to let you beat me into submission. I'm not going to be quiet. I'm not going to go away, and you're not going to win." And when the average Joe that doesn't really have that much resolve sees more of us doing that, that's what kind of gets a lot of the bench warmers and the fence sitters off and gets them to join in the fight. And that, I think that really started happening about a year ago. Just your average Joe started kind of standing up and saying, "Yeah, you know what? We got nothing to fear from these people. I mean, what? Look at Dean. Look at the noise that guy was making. What's the worst they could do to him? They threw him in prison for a year? Okay, well, that's the exception to the rule. They're not going to do that to everybody. They can't throw 11 billion people in prison for years. They just can't do that. They'd have to shoot us all. And they can't do that. If this ever turned into a war where bullets started flying, well, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty confident with 6.5 billion against 500 million people that they can put on their payroll to shoot guns at us. So I'm not worried about that at all either. I really think they're hoping it doesn't go that way, that we're more scared of than they are of an all-out war of some kind. It'll never happen. A lot of people talk about that. That just is not going to happen.
Well, no. I mean, there might be small factions of that occur, but I think what it really is I was speaking on my show a couple of weeks ago to a history professor at the University of New Mexico, and we were talking about the forms of globalization that were planned out in Nazi Germany, Hitler's plan, and the forms of globalization that we have today, and the ways in which both sets of globalization was rolled out. And if you go back and you look at World War II and the way that things were rolled out, I mean, things were rolled out in a very direct, in-your-face, stomp you into the ground kind of a way, which does happen today. But socially, what we see, I think, happening more than anything is a very slow, kind of a dripping, almost a form of torture, the way that we are kind of coerced into submission through social engineering and through suggestive thinking and subliminal messages and corporatocracy. And we see this happening much more than just direct physical force. It's about mental subduing nowadays more than it is just coming door to door and beating people down. Nowadays, right. People purchase devices to monitor themselves, and they track themselves, and they send all their information into Facebook and Twitter. You don't really have to have those boots on the ground as much as you do just have to have a computer system, a database, and you have everybody tracked and traced. So it's much different today than it was, say, 60, 70 years ago.
I was going to mention, too, what I said earlier about Bo Baker, the 20-year-old who was just killed by Kitchener police on April 2nd. There is a movement starting up in Kitchener. Some of our own people are involved in it. There is, and I don't like to use Facebook, and having been banned from it, I'm sure it hasn't influenced my opinion of it. But anyway, there is a Facebook site called Justice for Bo Baker. And people go to that and join up, find out when the meetings are. I know they're having a meeting tonight. One of the things they're demanding is that the Kitchener police stand down and stop shooting people. And this is a perfect situation where people could step in and start electing their own sheriffs and take over community policing themselves, get people to start monitoring their own communities, not rely on these murderers in uniform. So that's, you know, a great opportunity there in Kitchener. Anyone in that area, please contact us. You can write to republicofkanata@gmail.com. We'll put you in touch with a number of the groups in Hamilton, Toronto, and Kitchener. They're all working together on this Justice for Bo Baker movement. And, we'll have more on that. As a matter of fact, the next few programs, we're going to have more details about, you know, what's happened, what people are doing there about this. Go ahead, anybody.
Oh, okay.
Comments.
What was I just going to say? When it comes to the police organizations and stuff like that, because every single police organization in Canada falls underneath the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, they're all governed by the same institution. It all comes back up to that. The acting head of the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, CACP, is the provost marshal for the military. So all police are military. They're governed by the military. Which all comes back again to the Governor General of Canada. It all falls under that. But you got to remember, these people are our representatives. We voluntarily chose to appoint them as our representatives. If we don't like what they're doing, then fire them. Send them a letter and tell them they're fired. A notice of termination. Your services are terminated. I don't want your services anymore. Period. I no longer want anything to do with
the military, too, because that's why they can act in secrecy. Like, for example, this cop who shot Bo Baker to death, they won't release his name. There's no indication whether he's ever going to be prosecuted. And there's a group called the Special Investigations Unit, the SIU, which is set up by the Ontario government. They're going in there doing their own private investigation. They're not telling anybody anything. So this is exactly, the kind of ludicrous thing that we've got to get rid of.
Private investigation is another kind of a tricky way they use words. It just basically means a whitewash, I think.
Yep.
Well, another thing everybody has to remember is when you register to vote and you go and you vote and these politicians are now your representative, you've given these people general power of attorney. They don't have to answer to you. You didn't put terms and conditions on that appointment. It's right. General. It's a general power of attorney. They don't right. answer to you. They don't have to answer to you. You gave them all the authority they needed to do anything without explanation to you, period. That's why I keep telling people they have to get rid of this authorization that they gave this institution of called Canada. Get rid of it. Tell them you are fired. I am revoking all power of attorney. You no longer represent me. You don't have power of attorney. You don't speak for me at all. I'm out. I want nothing to do with you. You're fired.
So you know what?
Sometimes they tell you, General. Elected officials, what about the majority of unelected, say, civil servants who are running the system? Can the same kind of stand down issue order be issued against them?
Well, of course, because all their authority derives from these elected representatives. They don't have to have elected representatives underneath them, right? They're delegating authority. Right. That's what they do. It would be a mess if people had to vote for every single one of these public servants. You've given them general power of attorney to do all of this without checking with you. They're just doing it. They are you when they're passing statutes in Parliament and the legislative buildings in the provinces. They are you. When a new law is passed, you pass that law. That is you creating a statute that hires all these people to do all this stuff. So you have to stop doing that. You don't want to be represented by these people anymore. You don't want to be you in the Parliament. You don't want a representative there anymore. Right. That's how that whole scam works. So you have to absolutely revoke that authority. Remove yourself from the voting registry. Tell them I'm out. I don't want to vote anymore because I do not want representation in Parliament or the legislative branches of government. I don't want you representing me.
So instead, we could set up our own local bodies of self-governance. Is that one example of what we could do in to replace it?
Exactly. Or people could just live by themselves, their own authority. We don't even need a system like that in place. It's preposterous. It's so archaic. We've been programmed to believe that we need these institutions. We need some form of government. No, we don't. We don't need any form of government, so to speak. All that's causing all the world's problems is all these governments that are fighting each other, allegedly, for our benefit. And it's not. It's not benefiting anybody. Everybody's so scared of this word anarchy. And oh my God, you'd have anarchy. There'd be people everywhere doing whatever they want. And again, no, just go and look up the definition of the word anarchy. All it means is a complete absence of government where people govern their own lives by a moral code. Through morality. You govern your own life through morality. Well, that's the problem. We don't have morality anymore. We have keeping up with the Kardashians. Everybody's being programmed to be a completely moralist piece of shit. And that's why we need government. You can't function when everybody has no morals, when morality is gone. So that's why the general masses need to be governed, because they're completely moralist. They couldn't govern their own lives if they wanted to. And that's why education is the key here, with getting everybody to be not ignorant anymore, and then revoking all these authorizations for power of attorney and to act as you that we gave these politicians. That's all they're doing, is they're acting as you. That's what general power of attorney is. They're not passing laws. You are, because he's acting as you, whether or not he's the guy you voted for or not. You took part in the democratic process. I don't care if the other guys, if the people or whoever you voted for didn't win, the other guy won. That's still your representative now. He represents you. He's acting as you. He is you. They're not passing laws. You are passing laws. They're not authorizing the police to beat people and shoot people. You are authorizing them to do that. That's how this system and this scam works.
Right. People Dave, have thanks to for that clarity. It does put a lot of things in perspective. We got about 3.5 minutes here. Just both of you announce your websites again and remind everybody to follow our work at CanadaRepublic.ca. We'll be back in a week. And the closing song is very appropriate. It's the Battle of New Orleans, what we intend to do to the authority of the Crown. So announce your websites, and then we'll sign off with the song.
Go ahead, Dean.
Okay. Well, yeah, my website is deanclifford.info. And that's going to be expanded pretty soon. We have a new forum that's going to be up and running for everybody to get involved and start helping us with our projects that we got going on. We got a lot coming down the pipe. People are going to love. We're entirely real-world action-based. We have things going on that people are going to love. So deanclifford.info. Every Monday from 5 to 7 Central Standard Time, I'm on CCN, Conscious Consumer Network. And that's where they can go to listen to those. They're archived by the middle of the week. And then we have them up on my website, again, deanclifford.info. Man, people can't go to Facebook to find me anymore. I've been maxed out at 5,000. I think I was there before I even went to jail. I've got 600 pending friend requests right now that I can't add. But I do have a page people can go to. It's Dean C. Clifford. It's a page. I update it all the time. It's got links to my videos. Come find us there. Again, I'm not going away. I'm changing my tactics a bit here, and we're gonna grow, and we're just going to inform people, and we're going to get some real positive change going here through divestment. Divesting from them and investing in us.
Thank you, brother. Go ahead.
My website is www.thesecretteachings.info. That's thesecretteachings.info. I also have a tab on the website for the ITCCS. I have a full list of all of my past episodes of The Secret Teachings the past, 5 or 6 years now. And coming up tonight, my show will be airing a full 3-hour new episode on the LNM radio network. There's a link to listen for free on the website. And the topic of tonight is very appropriate. It's actually called Beltane and the Black Vatican. So that will be very informative, 3 hours long. And other than that, I really appreciate you having me on the show, as always, Kevin.
Right. Thank you, brothers. We'll talk to you again in a week. And until then, everyone, be strong. Thank you.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the...